I was the conductor of the Underground Railroad for 8 years, and I can say what most conductors can't say. I never ran my train off the track, and I never lost a passenger. If he was weak enough to give out, he'd be weak enough to betray us all, and all who had helped us. And do you think I'd let so many die just for one coward man? God's time, emancipation, is always near. He set the North Star in the heavens. He gave me the strength in my limbs. He meant I should be free. Harriet Tubman to Edna Dow Cheney, New York City, circa 1859. In this holiday season, when true American heroes are so important to our celebrations and to keeping our spirits high, I'm proud to introduce you to Harriet Tubman, an icon of American history, the subject of any number of biographies, and now the focus of this new book, which is as much mystery as biography as her life unfolds, discussion of history as it is grippingly told story. A bit about a life of this woman whose likeness has been proposed for the $20 bill. Harriet Tubman was born into slavery and lived much of her early life in the Tidewater area of Maryland, for in pre-Civil War years, Maryland still allowed the institution of slavery. Ms. Tubman came to know the miseries and the degradation of slavery firsthand. Before she escaped to the North, she suffered a number of physical, not to mention mental traumas, noted in today's text. But having escaped the slavery of Eastern Maryland, her memories of misery were not set aside for a life of freedom in the North. Tubman took it upon herself to make annual return trips to her former home, with the goal of bringing friends and family members to freedom. And I think the remarkable note is that so much of Tubman's freedom work was done without the aid of mechanized or transport. It was accomplished through hard slogging through the woods, through the swamps, often at night, when she and her charges were least likely to be detected, and in the often cold and snowy late fall months, for Tubman spent her winter, spring, and summer months recovering from these extraordinary trips south, and she was raising money from well-wishers and supporters, which would allow her to pay for her expenses and pay off the locals while she was down south. She needed to assuage as the Underground Railroad worked its will to bring the enslaved to freedom. As our author writes about her years in the 1850s, by spring, Harriet had recovered her energy and was ready to head back to the United States from Canada to make some money and plan additional trips back to Maryland. Her network in Philadelphia helped her find work, and she headed back down to the resort town of Cape May, New Jersey, to work as a cook for wealthy white families. Once she had saved enough money and the autumn's leaves had started to fall, Harriet planned her next rescue and returned to the eastern shore of Maryland yet again. We don't know the names of the people she helped, but Harriet returned to Canada with 9 more fugitives that year. This became a pattern for the conductor. She would work during the summers and save as much money as possible, and at some point during the fall, she would travel back to Maryland to save another group of runaways. By 1854, Harriet had made at least 5 trips back to the eastern shore, and she had rescued close to 30 enslaved people. During the winter, the conductor pulled off one of her most daring rescues. She arranged to bring her brothers Henry, Benjamin, and Robert Ross out of slavery and to the safety of Canada. Indeed, not content to settle in the Yankee North, especially after the heinous fugitive slave law upheld by the Supreme Court allowed slave catchers to ply their trade anywhere in the U.S., North or South, Tubman increasingly encouraged newly freed friends, family, and quite a few others to take themselves to southern Canada. It was there that she too settled her close family and relatives, along with increasingly more and more freed men and women, as the slave catcher's writ did not extend into our northern neighbor. While conducting her spur of the railroad, Tubman became increasingly well known throughout the abolitionist community, both north and south. But her notoriety was not always a windfall for her finances. And as the nation's laws would have it, she remained, in reality, a woman considered to be enslaved, in danger of being returned and punished by her owner, were she ever caught by slave catchers anywhere in the United States. And yet, even as her notoriety brought her to the attention of both supporters and those who would return her to slavery, Harriet Tubman labored on, depending on her faith in God and her cautious, wide network of abolitionist supporters. As one page turns to another, as one story leads us to another, author Erica Armstrong Dunbar strips away the veneer of saintliness and sanitized heroics that surround so many of the women and men who engaged in freeing slaves in the middle part of the 19th century, certainly for Harriet Tubman. Bringing to light are the struggles both enslaved and freed had to grapple with, as Dunbar explains to us, day-to-day life and the seasonal tides of life on southern plantations. Those are woven into this story of a brave effort to afford basic human dignity to other human beings. In a most harrowing part of this grippingly told biography, we share for a moment the joy and the grief of Harriet Tubman meeting with her father, who was to remain in slavery one fateful Christmas tide. Her brothers were habitual escapees. It had been 5 years since Harriet first left Maryland, and during those years, all three of her brothers made repeated attempts to escape. None of them successful. If they had followed their sister's lead, if they had traveled with her to Philadelphia, they would have avoided the past 5 years of enslavement and the beatings that inevitably accompanied every unsuccessful attempt to flee. Over the years, the situation grew more dangerous for Harriet's brothers, and as the winter months of 1854 approached, everything came to a head. The Brodus widow, who owned them, was tired of the Ross brothers and their repeated attempts at escape, so she decided to sell the three siblings during the Christmas holiday. As there was little time to spare, Harriet had sent a letter to Jacob Jackson, a free black man in Dorchester County, Maryland. In the letter, Harriet embedded hidden messages to her brothers, stating that they should be prepared and ready to step aboard when, quote, the good old ship of Zion comes along, end quote. Although the letter was inspected by the postal authorities, it raised no suspicions. And Harriet was able to get news to her brothers that she would come soon for their rescue. She planned their escape carefully, choosing Christmas Day for their departure date. This was the most opportune time for the brothers to escape, as the pace of work over the holidays was often slowed, allowing the enslaved to visit and celebrate the holy holiday with one another. This fleeting Christmas joy was often followed by mass slave sales at the beginning of the year, sales that would eradicate whatever debt the enslavers had accumulated for the year. And in this case, the Brodus debts continued to mount. The siblings, we learn, were to meet at her parents' cabin, and from there, Harriet, her brothers, and a small number of enslaved friends would begin their journey out of slavery. Family history reports that Harriet and her brothers had their father blindfolded and brought to them as they waited in a nearby building. Harriet's father was blindfolded so that if he was asked when he had seen his children, he could honestly answer no. Harriet had not laid eyes on her father for 5 years, and for a few glorious moments, she had an opportunity to talk to her daddy. It's easy to imagine that she promised to return to him one day, but in that moment, she had to save her brothers from certain and immediate danger. As for her mother, the siblings decided it was best not to involve her, however painful. They took hold of their father's arms and, quote, he accompanied them some miles upon their journey. They then bade him farewell and left him standing blindfold in the middle of the road. When he could no longer hear their footsteps, he took off the handkerchief and turned back, end quote. Harriet Tubman's brave and necessary work did not end when the Civil War broke out in the spring of 1861. As the failed Buchanan presidency gave way to that of Abraham Lincoln, Tubman took up the cause of freedom through a new calling. She became a spy for federal troops, working in the tidelands of South Carolina, far from her original home in Maryland, but similar in South Carolina to its setting as her original home. And so Tubman entered the service of the Union Army, first as a cook and nurse, but not after too long taking up the role of nondescript spy, working sources she developed among the newly liberated freedmen and women, as well as those still enslaved. From them, Tubman learned the secrets of Confederate army movements, Confederate stores and journeys, discovering truth through the eyes and the ears of those the Confederates were more likely than not to simply ignore, and thinking capable of observing the Confederates' troop movements, how wrong they were to continue to think so little of their fellow human beings. A final note, this is not a glossy-covered, long-winded look at a lasting American hero. The book is illustrated with line drawings and simple maps, the print is larger than one might expect, and the entire book can be read in a couple of sittings, but the power of the stories it tells and the direct style it employs makes this book something important and something well worth your time. Let's give the last words to this brave and faithful woman. As our author states, her testimony speaks to us still today. In 1886, Tubman is quoted as saying, "I had reasoned this out in my mind. There was one of two things I had a right to, liberty or death. If I could not have one, I would have the other. For no man should take me alive. I should fight for my liberty as long as my strength lasted. When the time came for me to go, the Lord would let them take me." And finally, this. Harriet Tubman to Benjamin Drew in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, 1855. Quote, "I have seen hundreds of escaped slaves, but I never saw one who is willing to go back and be a slave." She came to slay. The life and times of Harriet Tubman, quite a powerful and good read. Written by Erica Armstrong Dunbar and available at all of our fine local public libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library. Thank you for listening.